signal to share what I've experienced. So the person that I've been praying for this week is approaching a new season in their lives. And so I've been praying for that. And while I was praying, I came twice, actually. I came once for myself and one for the person that I was praying for. And during the time that I was coming in for her specifically, when I was doing the maze and I was talking and asking God to give her guidance with regards to the next steps in her life and the stuff that she might be needing to look out for or signs or whatever. And in that moment, I just experienced this great sense of excitement that's bubbling up inside me. And I just felt I really wanted to share that. So I don't know what the Lord is planning and I don't know what he is doing in her life, but I definitely know excitement's on the way. Thank you.
It's a little bit problematic walking around this if you're trying to pray because you kick the stones. So I kind of found that a little bit distracting, actually, in a sense. So I ended up just standing back and just looking at it, like kind of what I'm doing now, I guess. But saying to God, what do I need to notice, or what's the significance of this for me right now, or something like that, that type of question. And I stood there for a while looking at it all, and there's the little candles along the way, but there's not a lot of them. I mean, there's quite a few, but they're spaced out. And then I kind of imagined, you know, all of us actually, the whole church, all on there at once. Can you imagine the chaos? But if you're walking along this side here, the others are going the other way, and it'd be kind of quite distracting, at least, if you're trying to pray. But I kind of thought, you know what, everybody's at a different stage, and some people are coming up to a sharp corner, you know, that might be a significant decision or a turning point or something, some event in life, you know, maybe it's becoming a Christian and you're going that way and then, whoa, you're coming back the other way. I mean, that could be the most radical change, but there's other things. And also, as you sort of look and you see there's lights around, so some people are passing the lights, but there's a lot of other people passing the no light at all. It's a bit dark, actually. And I kind of think, you know, that could be the moments of encouragement or closeness to God for some, but others aren't. And that's where, as a community, we get to share. It's the importance of being connected together and being in community, is that we can share those sorts of things, and even what you've just said. So that's kind of my little takeaway of this. But I think, it, you know, the importance of all of us on this journey here, doing different things, going in different directions, but being able to share and encourage one another along the way, I think is important. But it is all good to be able to do something together instead of being isolated and all the madness that we've done for the last few years. It really hasn't been helpful in a lot of ways.
Thank you. Yesterday morning, there were a few of us that came here and set out to pray around our community, around our streets, and we walked around. And Jenny and I and Judy just started up the corner here, and we were standing on the corner. So we go this way, that way. And a fellow came walking on the road and shouted out, "What are you loitering on the corner there for?" And come rushing across the road to us. And said, you know, what are you? And we said, oh, we're from the church over there. We're going to walk around the community praying for the people in these houses, praying that they'll know God and God will look after them. And he says, oh, yeah, oh. And he's talking away. He says, oh, I'm Tony, by the way, and I'm a probation officer. And I've just been to the gym and I'm walking home to Flagstaff. And I couldn't shut him up. He kept talking. And so I'm walking a little bit ahead of the other two. And we wanted to go this corner, but he wanted to go that way. So I kept walking and kept listening and talking. And as you know, God's actually pulled me out of a few holes over the years. And he said, I said, well, we're praying for these families. You know, maybe in the they got big mortgages, and in the last while the interest rate's going up and they're struggling to pay it. He says, I'll never be able to retire. I got a big mortgage, and I just won't be able to retire. I said, well, you know, I'll just tell you something. For 17 years, in the last 20 years, I never had any salary. I was working for this Christian mission organization, and I just relied on donations. And God provided for me and looked after me all those years. And now I'm living in a house that's freehold. God looks after you when you trust him. And he says, oh, well, yeah, I've got a friend like that. He's a pastor in a church somewhere over in Hamilton. He goes overseas and helps people with their things over there. Yeah, God looks after them. And I was just so encouraged, because I'm not an evangelist. I can't tell this guy, you need to give your life to Jesus, but I can witness and tell him what God's done in my life. And then I made an excuse that we had to go around the corner because he wasn't going to stop talking. And so the other ladies, and we went off around there, and I felt I had a wonderful time. It was a good walk exercise. I'd done 3 kilometres according to my phone when we got back. But I just felt we just need to do a little bit. We just need to be bold. We need to walk. And there were people we said good morning to. I think a few times we said, God bless you. But it was great. And so I just encourage you to share what God's done in your life with others. And he then, his spirit will work. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me all right? The people that know me, I haven't got much history in praying. It was mentioned to me by Mark earlier in the week about, have I been to church this week? I didn't think much about it because I knew I wasn't coming down here to mix with people and pray. It's just not my thing. Anyway, I came in here on Friday afternoon to do a couple of jobs, and I walked into the auditorium and I was amazed. I was amazed, really, that God led the people of this church to create this. And I was so entranced by it all that I stayed for 10 minutes or so and praying quietly to myself. Then I enticed Julia and Catherine to come in with me in the afternoon so they could see it too, because they hadn't been here. So the thing that struck me overall was that the people of this church have been in what would be the word, helped by God, if you like, to do this for us. And that's unusual for me, because I'd never seen anything like this before. I thought that was very good, and I was quite rapt about it. I must tell you another funny story about praying in my history of not praying very much. The first time I went to work in Israel was 2005. And the first job I had was working with Ukrainians. Now, you know a lot about Ukraine because it's been in the news a lot. Anyway, these Ukrainians were all relocated, if you like, to Israel because they wanted to settle, and they were all Ukrainian Jews. So my first 3 or 4 weeks was working with these guys who only one or two could speak English. But the thing was that every morning tea, they sat around a circle for about a half an hour. They had their morning tea, then they prayed. They all prayed out loud. And after a couple of days of this, one turned to me and said, don't you pray to your God? And I said, I don't know how to pray. Oh. I said, do you want me to say something? Well, we're all saying something. So I used to talk. I can't remember what I used to talk about, but I felt that I was a hypocrite because they weren't about to teach me. All they were teaching me is what they did. So I've been a bit wary since then about praying in public because I don't necessarily know what to say up front of a lot of people. I know how to pray with Jory and Catherine. I know how to pray here silently. but I'm not very good at praying publicly. So I thought here, this display by whoever created all this was for us. And I thought it was marvellous. Thank you.
I just want to make a comment, not necessarily related to this here, but just a comprehension of who we address when we pray. I was quite enthralled by the engagement that Jesus had with the woman at the well. It's a riveting and dynamic conversation that came spring from who Jesus was and who he wanted to communicate and who she wasn't and who she could become. And Jesus, in the course of the conversation, said, if only you knew what it was that God wanted to give to you, if only you knew who I was and that I could give you the water of life. And she said, quite naively, oh, give me that water, then I won't need to drink again. So, if only you knew what it was that God wanted, if only you knew what God wanted to give you, if only you knew who I was and what I could give you. And Jesus referred to the spring of living water that wells up within. So I think in our prayer, it's often a good idea just to be quiet for a moment and reflect on who you're addressing. The omnipotent, omniscient one, that would overpower any of us to think like that. But that's who God is, but he's also the God-man who in Christ came to speak to people like the woman at the well. So here this dynamic figure that we engage with, who's just out there, who's beyond us, but also this figure of humility and truth and justice and love that we actually engage with our hearts. And have you ever felt uncomfortable after prayer? I never have. There seems to be this deep-seated peace and composure that comes over you as you engage with the omnipotent one who is all-powerful. We should be blown away, but we're not. We're not. God is an awesome fire, but he's also a God of great compassion and love. So here's the tension between the God that we adore and the God that we engage with.
Thank you for sharing. I'm sure there are many other stories. Kind of makes me think we should provide these sorts of opportunities a little more often so that we can hear a bit more of what's going on in people's hearts and lives. We like to be able to, at some point in the year, give you a bit of an update on where things are at on a range of issues from eldership perspective. How are the finances looking? What are the elders talking about? What are we processing? What are we thinking about as far as where the church is at and its spiritual health and its engagement of one another? So while it might not feel as spiritual as what we've just been doing, it is. God is interested in the details. He's interested in how we invest our money, how we spend our time, and he's absolutely interested in how we as a church are as a body of believers. So I'm going to close this part of our service with a prayer, and then I'm going to invite Greg forward to talk a bit about the finances, and then Alex is going to have a conversation with about eldership issues. Lord, this does feel like a sacred space all of a sudden. It always is, because wherever we are, you are, and that makes it sacred. But what people have shared and your presence among us been made manifest and present, I sense that sacredness. Thank you for your preciousness toward us, how you speak to us, engage with us, open our eyes, move our hearts. You are so gracious to us. And Lord, as we think now about some of the mechanics or the structures of our community, Lord, may we recognize the sacredness of that as well. The many hours that many people put into keeping this place running and running well. Living sacrifices devoted to you. May we honor that and consider your work in a different way this morning. Amen. Greg.
The overall income and expense. Okay. Skipping on, So assets and liabilities. So as at 31 December 22, we had $30,000 in the bank. We had $7,000 owed from debtors, so people who owe us money. And we had basically the value of the buildings and the property of $3.8 million. We also had a few debts that we had to pay, including GST, and that was $29,000. So I haven't actually shown the value of the property in that graph because it kind of skews it way out of whack. As you might imagine, $3.8 million compared to, you know, $30,000, what's shown there. But that, as you'll recognise, is the most significant asset we've got. So we do a lot of work to protect it and make sure it's running well. Anyone got any questions so far? Yes. Good question. So the question was, how do we have people that owe us $7,000? So that's usually to do with renting the building. So every month we have certain people who rent the building from us, and that's particularly like Playgroup, FEBC, the Korean church, and that's just generally comes down to timing. So they might have used the building for December, which is usually the case, but they haven't paid us for it yet. So that's usually the way. So we bill them at the end of the month for their use, and then we get paid after that. So it's just a timing thing generally. It's not because, you know, they're not paying us. Okay, anything else? Any other questions? No? Cool, we'll kick on. All right, so looking... What was that, sorry? Yes, that's right. Yes, so that includes the property trust bank account, etc. Okay, so looking specifically at the income we receive. So the total income, as I said, was $144,000, and that was down 11% from the prior year, 2021. I will point out that during 2021, we did have some quite significant donations received, and that was particularly in relation to the carpet. So if we exclude those sort of one-off things, then the overall income was actually up, and that was mainly to do with the additional rental income we received. And as you'll see from that lovely pie graph there, it's kind of difficult to read, sorry, the text on it, but the blue one on the left, that's the rent, and the green one on the right, that's donations. So the church is actually significantly supported by the rent that we receive. And we are, as an eldership, looking at ways we can actually improve that rental income. Right, so looking specifically at the breakdown of that income, we've got 61% obviously is donations, 37% rent, a little bit of other stuff coming in. We did get a COVID wage subsidy, I think, which is only a very small amount, and as you might imagine, that's unlikely to continue for much longer. So probably some key points there, donations down 7%, so that's something I guess we need to consider, and that's I guess again why we're looking to improve our rental income. It is something we need to address on an ongoing basis. Okay, expenses. So total expenses, that was $151,000. So that actually decreased by $9,000 from the prior year. So the breakdown of that is, again, mainly staff, and the rest sort of split between ministry, administration, and building. So when we say ministry, so that's the money we use to support our both missionaries in New Zealand and overseas, and also part of the sort of internal church operations, which, you know, need some support as far as cash. The administration side is really just the day-to-day things which we need to operate the church. not overly tricky. And then the building stuff is sort of anything we need to keep the building operational, so rates, insurance, that sort of stuff. As you might be aware, a lot of the costs last year increased, so you will all have no doubt have experienced more costs going out of your pocket, and that's kind of hard to bear when your income's a little bit static. But and I guess for us, the insurance has been a big jump last year because we had a valuation done on the building, which meant the building value increased. And of course, the insurance then says, well, because your building is now worth this much, you need to pay a whole lot more. So that's a bit of a hefty cost we have to wear. But obviously, we can't be without it really, because this is our significant asset. So we have to roll with it. Okay, any questions on the income or expense side? No? Everyone delighted? Excellent. Okay, so looking specifically at the ministry support that we give, that's a total of $15,000 for the 22 year. So overseas, I think that's Marie Scully and I think also John and Wendy when they were overseas. In New Zealand, we've also got the McConnells, Coyles, and probably someone else. Tate's overseas as well. And then again, the internal sort of church stuff that we use as a small slice of that pie. Okay, so the ministry support, we obviously continue to support those we've commissioned to go as missionaries. That number is diminishing slowly from time to time, and unfortunately we aren't really in the position to support anymore, which is a real shame. But that is unfortunately a reflection of our financial situation, so we do what we can to manage that. But it would be nice to be able to support more people in that manner. Okie dokie. So bringing all that down to a personal level, so just speaking purely in terms of operating the church, basically we've got annual expenses of $1,642 per person, and that includes children as well. So for those of us like me who had three children, we have to wear a bigger slice of that. We receive $579 from external sources, so that means each of us needs to donate at least $1,063 each to keep the church running. So if we don't do that, then we're losing money each year. If we do manage to do that, then we can happily walk away with a surplus. So if we look at that in weekly terms, so that's $32 per person in terms of expenses, and we all need to donate $21 per person. So just a little something to think about. So it is a bit of a challenge we're facing always, and I think I spoke about this last time, is that we need to defer a lot of maintenance or some things which, you know, perhaps could be tidied up here and there. That's not ideal, but we don't have the money, so we can't do it. So we just do the bare necessities to keep us rolling. So just a challenge to each of us. If you love this place and you want to see it thrive, perhaps think about maybe missing a coffee each week and chipping a little bit more to the church. I guess also just touching on our sort of projects to generate a little bit more rental income. We will look to do maybe another project during the year to help that, and that possibly will be focused on the garden room or the meeting room, just to help revitalise that space, and then we can maybe look to generate a little bit more rental income from that. So that is the quick summary. Does anyone have any questions? I feel like I'm watching a tennis match here. No, okay. What's that, sorry? Yeah. Thank you. All right. Good, good. As I mentioned earlier, if you've got any questions about any of that, please come and see me. And hopefully we can let you know. All right, that is me. Thank you very much.
As Greg mentioned, one of the things, we can either increase donations by, you know, just squeezing the lifeblood out of you guys, or by getting more people in. And in effect, really, elders don't want to control, if you like, either of those two. We can't force people into the church, and we have no interest in squeezing the lifeblood out of you. If the Lord inspires you to do something about donating more, that's on your heart, not between us. We're just putting the information out there. But we have given Daniel, who we've employed in the office, a key role to think about how can we increase rental income, because that is something that we can do. So as Greg said, if we can invest in a couple of areas so that they become more useful for rental, that's what we want to do. So there might be some one-off things that we want to do, and we'll encourage or help or ask for some help in that respect if necessary. Even just, you know, muscle power to clean out the garden, which is getting a little bit tired, that sort of thing. I'd like to invite Alex up now.
Hi there again. I don't know what you thought when you came in looking at the chairs opposite each other like that, but just a little bit of insight into my deep history. The church that I used to go to as a kid was like this, except we didn't have this in the middle. We just had a table in the middle, and then everybody would sit and look at each other. So that kind of weirdly seems normal to me in a strange sense, but anyway. So just a few things to perhaps relate to you about what we've been up to as elders. One of the significant things that we've been looking at for a little while is what is the role of an elder at Chapel Hill? And you might think, well, goodness, Alex, you've been doing it for quite a few years. Do you not know already? And the answer is sort of yes, but there's things that we've encountered along the way which we sort of feels like it's harder than it should be, right? And it's like, so we've done a bit of networking and reached out within our CCCNZ network for some help. And we had a retreat with Kerry earlier in the year, Kerry Rickard, and to focus on a thing that's a program that they've called Spiritual Leadership, Spiritual Shepherding Materials. And so that was really good. We spent a couple of days looking over that and talking about it and some other input that Kerry thought was relevant. And so sort of the outcomes of that was actually we really do need to clarify as elders what we do, because things kind of drift over time. And what's this CCCNZ? Yeah. Christian Community Churches of New Zealand. So, yeah, it's sort of a renamed network that is a... Greg, is it actually a registered charity or anything like that? So it's a registered charitable entity that can, churches like us, can that have sort of brethren roots, can join, and they provide some services. Some of it is to do with pastors being able to do marriage celebrants. There's a benefit that, what, doubles the time that you have to? Yeah, it's better. And there's other support sort of resources and networking. So there's a number of people around the country that are called community enablers, and they arrange a number of events. It's like it's generally quarterly I get along to, and sometimes duties come, some of the others have come, but it sort of clashes with sports and things on Saturday mornings at breakfast. And they'll have speakers about different things, and in different, it's either at Cambridge or some of the other churches around town. And you kind of go there and you're never really quite sure what you're going to sort of get or
the benefit out of it. But there's always something, and you sort of come away and, oh, yeah, that was really good to go to. And I'll kind of relate to that a bit more soon. Back to the elder's role. So we need to clarify as an elder and as a pastor. And how do those two things work together? Because obviously it's been happening for a long time, but as part of the, sort of the reset things that we've been looking at, we needed to look at that carefully. Because what's an elder and what's the pastor, and how do those two things relate? You know, is the pastor an elder, or is that separate or not? And there's sort of consequences of one or the other. And so where we've sort of come down on that choice is that really the pastor is one of the elders whose full-time role is to do all the other stuff, a lot more of the working for the church than other elders. So that's really what it boils down to. There's a subtle difference, but it is an important one. It becomes the pastor is really a peer with elders. Now, what sort of messes with that is that we have to have a thing called an employment agreement, which then means, hang on, the pastor is responsible to the elders, and ultimately the church, if the elders are acting on behalf of the church. So it's a little messy, but it's fine. But yeah, so we've just been focusing on that. So an outcome of that is to get words on paper. Philip and Greg have been working on capturing some of those discussions and writing it down so that we have something enduring that we can reflect on, or if someone asks, and we intend to be able to give something to you all which sort of explains that concisely. Other things are things like community well-being and maintaining good relationships, and, you know, like this Matariki period of time as a bunch of getting together and opportunity to act and interact differently. So that's an important thing. And part of that is how do we, you know, maximize the benefits of being together and minimize the downsides, so maintaining good relationships. And so one of the things that we've been looking at is this, a thing called a reconciliation framework, which sounds really complicated, but it's really gathering a bunch of verses in the Bible and sort of categorizing them and laying them out on a single sheet of paper and says, you know, as Christians, these are the sorts of attitudes we should have with each other. And so that's something that will be really helpful. It's sort of laid out with four columns, and basically if we can keep the whole congregation, everybody on the left, life is good, and if we have to venture too far to the right, then we're missing something. So it's really simple. So that will be something that we'll make available very soon. We've done a bunch of reset activities, prayer, pastoral care, music, and be interesting to know, have you noticed a difference about music? Is it easier to sing? Hopefully it is, because that's what we've been trying hard to do. But it's been quite a change in some ways for the musicians. So another recent thing that's come up in the last few months has been, what does it mean to belong or being a member of Chapel Hill? Because it's a pretty loose thing. Some churches or certainly associations that you pay subs to and all this sort of stuff, it's quite clear what a member is and what not a member is. But we don't have that. But anyway, Philip's going to expand on that a bit more. Another thing is Judy and I and a few others here have been a part of Chapel Hill since before Chapel Hill was Chapel Hill. We started in Hillcrest many years ago, and the church did a branch. Some stayed, some left, and that was a process that sort of happened over about 6 months, and eventually a group of us left and formed this another church, and we wandered around different locations in Hamilton, and finally we arrived here after it was being built. And then subsequently there was another branch and Northgate was formed. And so that's all part of our history, but it's sort of like, actually we have hardly anything to do with Hillcrest or Northgate. There's some things, like mainly music, there's actually people involved from, individuals involved from those churches, but we don't do much as a church. And another thing is that leadership can actually be a bit of a lonely thing at times. Business leaders, community leaders, church leaders, because you can't always talk to freely about things that are happening in your situation, because it's kind of not appropriate, or if you did, it would freak everybody out, because it's sort of an odd thing. So it's helpful to have, as leaders, to have a bit of a support network, and that's one of the really important things that I like about Triple CNZ, is the events that we've been able to go to. But the thing is, you kind of need the support network in place first before you need the support network. You've got to have relationship before you can be helpful or be encouraging or come up with ideas, you know, sometimes about, like, what do churches do about prayer? What do churches do, different churches do about home groups or life groups or all those sorts of things? And being able to talk as leaders amongst a group of very similar churches and get feedback and ideas and encouragement is really important. And so I've sort of been frustrated with the lack of interaction, or disappointed, not more. And so last year I kind of finally, after quite a long time, like several years, did something about it, and sent an email off to Sally Slay and just sort of, what do you think? And she was actually overseas at the time, so it was a period of time before she was really able to get back and think about it. And we followed up on it, and we arranged a get-together of Hillcrest elders and Northgate elders, I don't know, 3 months ago. And just very low expectation, we just had got together and just talked about things and related some of our journeys and some of the felt needs that, you know, what might it look like if we were to work together a bit more. And so as a result of that, a number of personal interactions have happened and will continue to happen. The three pastors have been getting together and sharing some ideas. You've seen two of them here, and that's in my mind the first time ever. So Jonathan and Chris. You probably won't know, but the youth group joined up with the Northgate guys and went to the HM Rage event recently. And we're going to be sharing this Matariki meal next month. And so these are the sort of a first interactions or a first things that you're seeing. And I don't know what will happen in the future beyond that, but it's a good thing, I believe. And I'm just looking forward to positive things about that. So watch this space. Not that anything dramatic is organised and it will be revealed, but I'm just hoping for just more interactions. Yeah. Last thing, I've been rambling for a bit, even though I have got notes. Values. We are wondering if the word momentum, how does that sit with everybody? We're wondering if we were to change that momentum word to perseverance, would that be more relevant? You don't have to answer now, but just think about that. So that's pretty much the last thing that I wanted to talk about. And Philip is going to fill in the bits that I've forgotten. Thank you. Oh, on the values thing that's on the wall in there, the five values, the word momentum. If we change that to perseverance.
Yeah, essentially the thought on that, I feel loud. Essentially the thought on that is momentum is an outcome of persevering. And therefore it's the thing that we could probably do with the hope that we would end up with some momentum, rather than let's try and get momentum, you'd end up trying to have to persevere. So, so as you can tell, we have a lot on our heads. We have a lot going on when we think about stuff as far as the church is concerned, when we sit down and pray together and talk together as an eldership. And one of the things that Alex mentioned, and I think relates to everything that we've tried to do in the last couple of years, is this thing called clarifying expectations. When, by accident, expectations are met, everyone's happy. But on the occasions when they don't, that tends to be when there's tension or disagreement or rubbing. It's when someone's expectation of someone else or of a particular event wasn't met. And so the more you can clarify the expectations, you lower the risk of disappointment or those sort of unnecessary tensions. You never get rid of tension in a community. It's full of people. There's always going to be issues. And that was a big thing about what we're trying to do as far as what is an elder and what is a pastor. Because, of course, everyone has expectations of a pastor. And as long as they are met, everyone's happy. But when they're not, people are upset. And so we've tried to clarify among the elders, well, what is my role among the elders? And in doing that, we realized, well, I'm a subset of an eldership. So in order to clarify my expectations or what's expected of me, we have to work out what is expected of an elder generally, which is why that whole journey has been going on. So we know exactly what an elder should do. And in some ways, eldership's not that hard to work out. Everyone wrote down a list of things when we were in breakfast the other time. And honestly, what was on the paper was really good and totally expected. No surprises. It's actually not that hard to do to decide what you think an elder should do. We all know what they should be doing. The devil's always in the details. If you say that someone should be hospitable, what does that mean? Does that mean that everyone should have a chance at sitting in an elder's home, looking at their four walls? Or does it mean that an elder should always be welcoming on a Sunday morning? What do we mean by being hospitable? And unless we have a clarifying expectation on that, your expectations might not be met and you might be upset. If you expect to be in my house every other second Sunday and you're not, you might be upset. But if we say that's never going to happen, well, you have no reason to be upset. The expectation isn't you're not going to be in my house, right? That's what we mean. And when we thought about that, of course, guess what? We're a subset, the elders and the pastor, a subset of this other thing called members. We are all members of one body, are we not? We are all members of one body. And as we look for new elders, we are looking for among, guess what? The rest of you. The members of the church. Which means, well, what are our expectations of being a member at a church like this? What do you think of when you think, I mean, do you even think you're a member? And when do you think you've become a member? Because you've come 4 weeks in a row and have your name in the phone book, which actually takes about 2 years at the moment because it takes us ages to get that thing updated. Is it the amount of times you come, or is it just a sense in your own heart, I belong here now? Or is it something that you say to an elder, yes, this is my home, which actually is a fairly common thing. People will say, yep, actually, I think I belong here now. So there's an internal owning. But what does it mean, beyond that vague sense, to actually belong to Chapel Hill and to be a member of this body? So I'll wrap up with just this thought. Can I have those kids, if they've finished their pictures? I don't know if they've finished. Has anyone finished a picture? I asked the kids to draw for me a picture either of a battleship or of a cruise ship. And this was an idea that was presented to us several years ago by a visiting teacher preacher who was coming to WEC. Come on, bring them up to me. I'd love to have a look at them. And he described church as you can either be a battleship or a cruise ship. All right, what have we got here? Oh, we've got a battleship. Oh, mate. Thanks, Nate. Oh, it's all curled up. It's like an ancient scroll. What do the ancients foretell? Forsooth, it is a battleship. Oh, what have we got here? Oh, that looks like a party boat. Who doesn't want to be on that? Oh, that is elaborate. I love that one. Wow. Fantastic spa and yoga and massage and pools and people having a buffet dinner in a lounge area. Goodness me. What have you got? You got a bit. Tell you what, you wouldn't want to mess with that battleship. That has got everything loaded. That is ready to go. Oh man, that is amazing. That's an incredible battleship. Look at those guns. What have you got? Oh, whoa. What a party. He's flying with a bird. Now, that is definitely a fun cruise ship. Thank you, Caitlin. Have a look at these later, and you can tell there's a massive difference between a cruise ship and a battleship. Now, they're all ships. They're all designed to go on the water. But when you think about the word service, Sunday morning service, are you thinking, you're hoping that you'll get a good, entertaining morning? that you'll be served well, that you'll be served a nice hot drink, or if in the case of a cruise ship, a Mai Tai by the pool. It's a place that you come to be served by others whose job is to make you feel comfortable and to make you feel like you are the most important person in the world, is because that's a cruise ship mentality. Service in that idea is you've come so that others who have a job to do can make you feel good. And you go home feeling awesome. But if you're in a service, as far as a battleship's concerned, you are in the service to an army or a in the service of a, in this case, the Navy. And as a as someone serving in the Navy, the objective of a meeting like this would be to help you be a good sailor. That you would come hoping that you would be trained. And you would come knowing you have a role and you have a fit. And that your role is crucial to the whole thing working really well. And there is no one more important on that boat. The captain is not more important than the person who's swabbing the decks, because all of it matters. And if everyone's doing their part, the whole thing works really well, and it has a purpose. I think the battleship mentality is where we need to be. And that means everyone here, we are all here for a purpose. We all have a role. And I think we should be able to, if someone else comes to Chapel Hill and says, what does it mean to belong here? I think we should, and we don't, but I think we should be able to say some things about, well, being part of Chapel Hill means these things matter to us. And these things, if we are doing these things, we are part of this body. So that's what I would like us, what we would like us to be thinking about in the next little while, clarifying what we think being a member of this body really means. So that we could say it to anyone who comes and who asks us, what does it mean to be part of that ship called Chapel Hill? Whether you're a eldership, whether you're a membership, or just simply discipleship, we should be able to say something coherent about that. And I don't think we're there yet. So that's sort of our final thoughts, because we're obviously going to engage all of you on that and what it would mean, clarifying those expectations. All right, we are going to have lunch together now. And hopefully what has been shared, what has been scattered into the ether, is stuff that you might want to chew on together, sitting around having soup and buns. If it's too much for you, just enjoy your company. But hopefully there's some things that you can talk about. There's a finger pointing in a direction. Yes, the letters, yep, yep. Before we do have the letters. So if someone can bring me the letters, that'd be great. And I also need to remind you that next weekend is kind of our big finale, our big wrap-up of the Matariki Festival. So on Saturday night, we're going to have dinner together and have some fun family activities. Everyone's invited. Bring people along, even. It's going to be a shared dinner, so bring something to share. The doors will be open at 5:30. We're aiming to have dinner at 6, and then hopefully wrapping up and heading home at 9. And the following morning, it's breakfast, and we have some people who have offered to make bacon and eggs, so it's a little bit special. That'll also be at 8:30, but of course that will mean, you know, the slightly larger gold coin. There's a small one and there's a large one. And then there's ones that are made of paper, if you really want to. Or just put it in the bank account. But it's something a little bit special, a little bit more than the usual. So that's next week, 8:30 on Sunday morning. We're going to start with bacon and eggs. Oh my goodness, there's just a plethora of letters. There's one unnamed, and I feel a little awkward about opening it up. So if that was you, I'll just leave it here, and we'll quietly just drift off. You grab it and you name it and put it back in the letterbox. I don't want to open it because it just seems wrong. Jenny Cameron. Oh, I'll give it to you, Steve.
Rachel, I think McDonald's out here, are they? No. Elise? No, not here.
But you can take it out. Adrian Poole. Very good. King Fitness is not here. This is a very beautiful one, and it's for Gamer Arena. Joel Shepherd, Mark Thomas.
I'll leave it up here, mate. I'm getting lazy.
Carol Andrew. Another Elise, and oh yes, there's another gentleman. You better write yourself on. And Linka. Let me pray for our lunch.
And if anyone is willing, they can help me pack all this up because this needs to be put away before the Koreans come in. Lord, we thank you for your graciousness to us, your faithfulness to Chapel Hill. You have formed us, you have created us, you have planted us, and you will make sure that we bear fruit. I am convinced of that because of who you are. Lord, we ask that all that has been shared this morning, our hopes and our dreams and our sense of what you want us to focus on and work on as a church so that we can be more and more like you. Lord, I ask that we as a body will engage in that and be joyful in that engagement, knowing that you are working with us and working on us because you love us. And we ask, Lord, a blessing on the food that we have and on our fellowship this morning, this afternoon. Bless the food to us, bless the hands that prepared it, and bless these people. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, people, throw open the doors. Let the soup be supped. And thanks, kids, these pictures are amazing. If anyone wants to have a look at a great cruise ship and or battleship, yeah.